So I'd like to call the meeting to order, and I'd like to introduce the board, introduce ourselves, and then we'll introduce everybody to refresh our memories out there in the audience, who you are. So Pat?
Pat Griffin, history.
Katie Stevens, architecture.
Matt McDermott, archaeology.
Paul Morgan, architecture.
Nancy Peacock, architecture.
Bill Chapman, architectural history.
Bill Souza, cultural specialist.
Paul Philippiaka, archaeologist.
All right, so the first order of business on the agenda is the approval of the today's agenda.
Madam Chair?
Oh, yes.
Well, you can have them.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes, of course. Oops.
John Williams with the Stark White
Thank
Foundation.
Thank you, Pat.
Andrea Nandoskar with the Stark White Foundation.
Lola Humphreys, representing Valley Valley.
Sister Rachel Donnell.
Valley Valley, yeah.
Don Hibbard, doing the Ways and Residents.
Staff?
Chandra
Shippey,
Julia
Flaxster-Dee. Salvia, Ryan Shippey's Lisbon.
Okay, good. So, next, well, and I believe regarding the agenda, we did not get the minutes yet, so we will not be able to approve the minutes because the minutes of the July 25th limited meeting and the minutes of the July 26th meeting have not been made available to the board or posted or anything. As far as I spoke to Chandra this morning, and they're not done yet, so we will have to remove that from our minutes, from our agenda item as approval, and yes, we'll just move them to our next meeting, which I believe is in November. So do I have I'd like to ask for any other agenda items, if anybody would like to add anything to the agenda or revise it in any way. Posted here. One thing that has been changed, it's item number H, and I'll just mention this, it doesn't really change what we're going to discuss today, but I think everybody should be aware of it. I just became aware of it myself a couple minutes ago. Under the submitted nominations for our November 22nd meeting, there are four more nominations that we're going to be seeing. And let me just, if you guys want to add this to your agenda or you want to write it down, I'll just say, first of all, we have the Mary Bright House, which is the Lahaina House, which we've actually, this will be our second visit of that. Then we see the Judd Building, which is already posted, and Judd Building on 4th Street. The four more projects that are going to be coming up for this November meeting is the Gedge Residence, the Holly Eva Jodo Mission, which we had the site visit the other day for last time. The Honoka'a Hongwanji Buddhist Mission, and the Newcomb Residence. Now, I believe the Gedge and the Newcomb, yeah, is Don, yours. So those are on you said that both of them,
yes,
are kind of in Manoa or something,
right,
like that?
Yeah, one's across from Blue Triangle Park, and the other one's on Vancouver Island.
So the Gedge and the Newcomb. So there's going to be a total of six residences, or six projects, should I say. The one other thing I'd like to add to the agenda, and we could do that under G, under the 2019 meeting dates, I'd like to add, just to that discussion, I'd like to add the discussion about the meeting dates for the year 2020, so that by the time we have our next board meeting in November, we might have a draft proposal of those meetings. So if we could add that under item G, under meeting dates, 2019 would be also the 2020 meeting dates. Okay. Anybody else have anything they want to throw in to the agenda or remove? No? No. Okay. Can I have a motion to accept the agenda as amended? Bill Chapman, second from Alton.
I have a question. Will all this be written and given to us after we approve it? I mean, I don't mind taking the notes down, but are we going to have a written entity of all of this we're talking about?
Chandra,
thank you very much.
Okay. So let's call the question. All in favor of approving the agenda as modified and amended, please raise your hands. It's like we got a unanimous to revise that agenda. So we're going to skip over the minutes because we don't have them to approve it. So we'll go right into nominations. And the first one up is the Ronald Kamehameha Okahai Hawaii Von Holt Residence.
Good morning.
Kamehameha Ho'okahai Hawaii is our grandfather, and his middle name translates to the last sun, Ho'okahai, of the flag of Hawaii. And that is because he was the last person born during the active Hawaiian kingdom in 1898. It was August 11th. August 11th.
Ronald was one of five children of Ida Knudsen and Heinrich Harry von Holt. Ida is a descendant of the Sinclair family. They emigrated from Scotland to New Zealand in 1839. They stopped in Oahu along their travels. After some time in Pigeon Bay in New Zealand, Captain Sinclair was killed. So they packed up, headed back to Vancouver, stopping again in Oahu. And after a failed attempt in Vancouver, they returned to Oahu and stayed there, where Captain Cook offered to sell them the niihau for $10,000, which they accepted. Harry is a direct descendant of Hermann von Holt, who emigrated from Germany in 1858. Ronald married Dorothy Da Erdman in 1933. They had three children named Pini, Pio, and Pono. Ronald was a prominent cattle rancher, founded Kahoa Ranch in 1928 with Atherton Richards. Atherton is primarily the financial backer. He remained on Oahu. Ronald came over to the Big Island and ran the day-to-day business. He had many successes with the ranch. Planted 5 miles of ironwood trees along Kohala Mountain Road, and this was meant as a windbreak for the cows. Ronald and Dobb were well known for hosting soldiers in World War II. They would bring them from Oahu to do some R&R at the ranch. He founded the Hawaii Cattlemen's Association. He was well liked and respected in the community. This rest area, picnic area, was erected in his memory. It's also along Kohala Mountain Road. And there's a plaque inside giving his dates and in memory. This is a fresco. It is housed in a missionary chapel that is at Kahoa Ranch. It was restored by Ronald. It was commissioned by Atherton upon Ronald's passing. Jean Charlot is a French-born artist. He spent over 30 years in the islands, and his collection is permanently housed at the University of Manoa Library. Monty Richards took over soon after Ronald died, and the ranch split in the 80s between Pono and the Richards, and still remains in those families today. Veli Veli is a 2.7-acre parcel on the west coast of the Big Island. It is in the Ahupua'a of Pu'uanahulu and the Moku of Kona. Purchased in 1936, completed in 1938. It is isolated and surrounded by lava. Guest books from day one was a big tradition. There are many of them, and they date all the way back to 1936, 1937. A lot of history was kept in those. Kind of fun to go back and look at it. In this one, Ronald's entry, says, in 1937, we got Bert Ives and George Hogan down, and they seemed to catch the spirit of the place, and designed a house just as we had dreamed it. Of course, referring to prominent architects Albert Eli Ives and George Hogan. George Hogan returned in 1945 for his honeymoon, left a guest book entry, and said, a wish came true, but to return here after 7 long years to find the same isolated, comfortable Veli Veli. Never have I enjoyed developing the building more. There are 7 contributing buildings, 3 contributing sites, and 1 non-contributing building. So the contributing buildings are the main house, the sleeping house, the 2 water tanks, the hale, and the 2 luas. The 3 ponds you can see, north, middle, and south. And then the storage building is non-contributing. We just built that a few years ago. but built it to resemble the architecture and resemblance of the rest of the buildings. The perimeter walls mark the boundaries of the property. On the ocean side is concrete, protected from the ocean. And on all other three sides are dry stack lava walls. They are surveyed boundaries. The main house from the ocean, you can kind of get an overview of the main house, the freshwater tank, and then the hallway off to the right. The back side of the main house, overlooking the middle fish pond.
The pipes were erected when they first developed the property, and there was hog wire on top to hold up the palm front so they could have some shade, because there wasn't shade anywhere. And at that time, they planted the how, and the how have done really well. They take a lot of maintenance to keep it low and flat. If anybody's been to the Halikolani, they have a beautiful one there. So we don't have a team of groundskeepers, it's just me, but I do my best. They're starting to get old, and termites, and they're starting to die in places, so I cannot find small native how. They're all like variegated how or miniature how, so it's related to hibiscus. It's supposedly pretty easy to make cuttings from, but I'll go find a nice healthy mother plant and make some babies. There's holes in the concrete. You can see this one here, if I may. It's growing out of the concrete. It actually hasn't lifted the concrete that much, but there's four more available holes that I've just recently prepped for when I get around to making some cutting. That's our water tank here to the right. It catches fresh water off of every eave of the roof. Originally, there was only one gutter that ran down one side of the house. It was made out of redwood, and it dried and cracked, and it didn't catch any water anymore. So aluminum was all the way around. And there's a lot of roofs, so that tank's almost always full. I think it carries about 3,700 gallons when it's topped off 8 feet by 8 feet on the inside. We've got solar panels and a little RV pump that pumps the water out of the pond into the house. And now we have fresh water running in the house, fresh water down to the shower. Back in the old days, you'll see another picture coming up. The water tank would look similar to that. It's up on a hill. The only flowing water on the property was brackish water from the pond. A little grease extracting pump. We'd pump it up, fill it up every now and then. Some of the changes we've done over the years. Mm-hmm.
So this is the interior looking towards the kitchen. Concrete floors, original cabinetry, canic ceilings. The interior walls are all black rock. More original cabinetry. This tree was made by Ronald, 1938. Coconut tree table. It came from original trees on the property, and it's really withstood the test of time there. It did get moved out a little bit in one of the tsunamis.
In one of the upcoming photos, you'll see it off to the left of the image, like poking out that side of the house.
The Gunes, again, all original cabinetry. This is the sleeping house. Same concrete floors, black interior walls. There are three rooms that are divided by redwood interior walls. These bunks have been replaced from damage. All other woodwork is all original. That is the other side of the freshwater tank. And that's the freshwater tank that he was referring to. A little bit more rustic of stonework on that one. Why don't you talk about the hallway?
The hallway, well, there were two originally. In the notes, there's a story about the second one, not this one, but it was at the North Pond. This was the women's pond, then there was the men's pond, much like there's a men's lua and a women's lua. The old holly eventually just rotted. It was under this giant noni tree. It didn't get much sun, and it kind of rotted, but it got moved during the tsunami of 1960, I believe. I guess moved off its foundation, but it was still in one piece. Uncle Pono's shirt was still hanging up in it because he'd forgotten it the time before. But it's thatched with pandanus, or la hala, and I was just doing some research. I cannot find an image or any text about that style of thatching a holly. Everyone's doing new for the coconut, or they're using pili grass, but there's a good shot of it. It takes harvesting leaves, tying them in bundles, and soaking them in the pond, and they don't sink. You have to put rocks on them, and if you don't tie it well, the knots come off, and the leaves just float all over the pond. You got to go collect them again. But about 3 years ago, I rethatched both pitches of the roof because the line that they used in the old days didn't stand up to the sun. So it would break, and then the wind would come. Very open to the trade winds there. And the wind just blew it all off. So there was some remaining, but we just took it all down. It's a good project. Took quite a while for two of us to do it. I would take the dowels were all rotten too. They're like 1-inch wooden dowels to hold them up. So I would take all the fronds after they've soaked for about 4 or 5 days. They get soft enough that you can actually work with them. And off of the holly, I would hang them up in the shade, and we would just like lay them over and lash them, and then take it as a unit and set it up into place. And of course, straighten it out, because while moving it, it all gets shifted around, and then lay it down over the first course, obviously work the way up, and then lash it again to secure it before it can make the next piece. I don't look forward to doing it again. I still have horns.
There are two original Lewis. They're original, the only bathrooms we've ever had there. Wood seat and flooring. It's got some bamboo along the three walls. And then the center pole is what secures it to the ground with a round center roof. And of course, the thatching on the top has to be replaced quite often. They are set back along the perimeter wall. To the left is the non-contributing building. But again, we built to mimic the same architecture as the others.
We considered the different options we have because we had boat stuff and fishing stuff that would store in one of the bunk rooms, but we kept getting broken into, so we needed something that was a little more secure. And then you think about what styles of construction. Do you get a Home Depot plastic shed, or build something out of 2x4s and siding? And I thought, for Valley Valley, we're going to do it as perfectly as we can to match the existing buildings on the property. And the footprint, if you look at the site plan, the bunkhouse in relation to the main house, they're not parallel. They're both kind of skewed. So I did the same with the boathouse. I just kind of skewed it off a little bit to the side. It's a 2x6 stud wall, and the rock wall's probably about 14 or 16 inches thick, so it's, I believe it's tsunami proof. This is a really high tide during this photo. So there is a little bridge right here that goes to a little island right here, and you may have read in the notes that that island during the tsunami of 1946 was no longer an island because so much beach rock got pushed over and just filled it all in. But I have, in my lifetime, seen, because we grew up going down there, I have seen sea level rise because ancline ponds, brackish ponds, come up and down with the tide, obviously, but there's a wooden dock or deck that we have built down there. I had never seen the water come up and touch it up until about 4 or 5 years ago. Now, not only does it come up and touch it, it goes up like another 4 inches at the highest height. There you go. Mm-hmm. So we have a bridge that we use to get to the Lua, and if there's high tide and surf at the same time, it just floats off. You jump in, swim over, and get it, put it back. The boat there is a little aluminum boat. We just use it to mess around in the pond, but also to help keep the napaka from growing into the water and get everything cut back. Trying to minimize the impact of green waves falling into the pond and contributing to the silt at the bottom. So it's kind of a... Yeah, so grandfather's idea was to raise mullet that you could eat in the ponds there. And there's three ponds with narrow passages in between, and his plan was to build gates so he could control the flow of the fish through there. I don't believe he ever got to raising mullet. I do remember Ava. Dossie liked the color, so there was koi in there. There's some of the biggest holy holy I've ever seen in there. And whoa, whoa, when I go and I collect fish at night in the tide pools in the ocean with a light and a scoop net and a bucket, I just go and introduce into the pond to try and keep the fish numbers up. And I've put a lot of fish in there. And I also hooked up with a guy named Buddy Keala, who works for the Oceanic Institute. And he was raising, or he worked for someone who raised mullet on Molokai. So he came down, we walked around the property, and he deemed the property really good for raising mullet. So he gave us, I think, about 4,000 baby mullet that had just hatched. And I paid for the shipping. They got air flighted over from Molokai, and styrofoam boxes, inside cardboard boxes, and each like little bags with pure oxygen in them. And they missed their flight, so some of them died. But I estimated we put in probably about 1,500 to 2,000 fish in there, and I had prepared a small section of pond with plastic and rocks, and I just isolated it from the rest of the pond because I didn't want the holy holy eating them. You know, I wanted to be able to raise them, and plus we were given food to feed them to get them started. Now looking back at that time, and when Grandpa put, you know, he put those where he was going to put sluice gates, the tides weren't as high back then. If the tides were as high, or the water level was as high as it is today, like all those cakey fish that I put in my little area would have just swam out at high tide. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do that now. Nowadays they could. So that's how much water's down. Yeah. So the mullet got to about this big, and they do their thing where they jump a couple times. And we have increased foot traffic to the ocean, and there's more and more people looking to fish and dive, and there's fewer places for them to go because of some developments and areas where they make, like...
I want to be like, sure that we can... Are you guys pal with your... We want to have... lots of time to ask questions.
Okay,
too,
we'll just,
are you guys?
We've just got like a few more photos.
Okay.
Yeah. Some historical pictures. This is when they were restoring the ponds. The holly that still stands today.
And you can see there's no how tree then. If you look closely, you can see the how fronds on them.
Original construction photo. Yeah. Looks very much the same as it does today. Interior.
This is post tsunami. See the coconut table pushed out the window to or the doors to the left.
And then just wanted to, the ownership is still in our family. For it's been put into an LTD and LLC for family reasons, but it's still all in our family.
Some of these are not in the nomination yet.
Those are all in there.
Oh, every one of these
yes.
is? Okay, mm-hmm. Great. I did read it, actually. But these are new, though, yeah?
Yeah.
No, did you have
They're,
these?
Yeah, they
you didn't have these in the first go.
No,
right?
I did not.
So are you guys pal with your
yep.
with the initial presentation?
Yes.
Okay, because I think we might have maybe bring the lights back up.
Okay.
I suspect there might be some questions
sure.
and some conversations.
Sure.
We can, By the way, for those of you that might not know, this is the second time they've come, and we see a huge influx of information from first to second. A lot more information to revise it. Really good, super good stuff. And so I'm just, in case anybody in the audience wasn't here last time they came. So I think what we'd like to do now is open up to if there's anybody else that wants to say anything from the audience, and then or anybody from the board would like to ask questions or comments.
I have a question I want to ask. I just noticed that you had the Jean Charlot painting in there. Where is that painting?
It's up at the headquarters of Cahoua Ranch and the
chapel. Cahoua Ranch, yeah, on the Big Island?
Yeah. It was initially down in Quai Hai.
The chapel was.
Right.
Yeah, I saw the caption said something about the chapel, so it originally was there.
It's a restored missionary chapel that Ronald brought from Quai Hai.
Well, that interests me a lot because Jean Charlot, as you know, is a well-known painter in Hawaii who was in the revolution in Mexico, and then he came to Hawaii. So he was a student of Diego Rivera, who was a well-known muralist in that period. So that's the reason I asked the question about that. And I also wanted to ask about the thatch houses, the thatch roof of the property. Is that original and you just learned how to do it, or was it there originally?
It was built there by Ron had it built. Jack Paulo, I believe, was the first person to do it. And then he showed George Kahono, who was our caretaker at the time, how to do it. And then been done once since, twice. Well, I repaired the top cam and thing, did it once.
Okay, but originally it had its roots in the discovery of the property and the whole thing. Originally it was there. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with all the work you've done on this, so thank you. It makes it really clear. And I do have a copy of it, but I just want to remind myself, I guess, I noticed you call some properties, you know, you have to do the property list of what's contributing, what's not contributing, and you referred to, I think, the tanks as a building. But have you gone over that with the state? Because certain things would be structure, not building, probably, for the count. And that's something you might want to, Julie, you might want to go over that, right?
Okay.
There's a count here. There's a section where you have to do the building count right here.
It's not under structure.
So some things would be called, so you may want to, there's like a whole list in the National Register thing of exactly what counts as a structure, what exactly counts as a building, but I think you might want to clarify that. You should get some staff help on that one.
You only have one non-contributing building shown, which I assume is the new one that you just storage on the industry stand though. You have seven buildings, and you're calling three of them sites.
That's ponds.
Which
would
be sites. It's the ponds, right? Yeah.
So I would say right offhand, water tanks are probably a structure. Alan, do you remember?
Yeah, I would say those are structures.
Because they're inside. They're kind of inside a building, though. Yeah.
They're freestanding.
They're freestanding.
Oh, okay.
The definition is, I think, for a building is something that can be used for human habitation or use. That you can go into, but then they contradict themselves. People like how they think it's a structure.
It's
just the classification systems uncover everything easily. Yeah.
I also wonder, where do you guys keep the guest books?
They're kind of spread out.
The original ones my mom has gotten, and she's laminated and has those in the closet at home. And then for so many years, we keep them down there, and we take them home and try to protect them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you're well aware of how important they are.
Yes.
Kind of these historic memory in those.
Yeah, there was even, it's in there, but after one of the tsunamis, our dog was like, thank God this book made it, it was only just a little wet, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting, I noticed that in the original one, you just had Albert E. Ives as the architect, I think.
This is something we learned.
So, by your going and reading the books, you found out.
Yep, we learned a lot.
There was a second guy.
Uh-huh.
Right?
There
was also a very good architect.
True, and we learned that some things weren't true that we had been told all of our lives.
Uh-huh.
And learned other things.
Fascinating.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Pat.
Thank you. You're not including the dry stack wall as part of the nomination?
I did not.
Why?
Maybe just because I'm unaware.
You know, I was privileged to go to the property, and it is clearly a remarkable place and a worthy thing. And this nomination, it is so much different and complete. And I'm a researcher, and I know you worked really hard on it. Just the form of what the request is, you've really gotten, and it was a pleasure to read. So congratulations on that. The wall seems to me a structure that is worth including as a contributing. To the property, and it's so clear. Your aerials, you see it there.
Alden? Well, I had the privilege of also being there. I found my old picture of me in like the early 1980s too.
Oh, you did?
I forgot to bring it today, but I found it. Pictures of me by the holly.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the early 1980s. Yeah. Anyway, having been there twice now,
yeah.
I would say this is an extraordinary property, and if anybody, either on this board or in the audience, can contact these guys and go down and see it, it is just so spectacular.
And be more than happy to take it.
Such a wonderful, wonderful parcel, and I'm so glad it's there.
Yes.
And really keep doing what you're doing, because it's really a unique, a beautiful, well-maintained, and just like heaven on earth, really.
I have a question. I have a question from someone from Oahu. Could you show us a map as to where exactly is this place?
Yeah,
it's on it's in the report, too.
Well, you keep talking about it, but nobody says where it's located. A big island is not a small place. It's a very big place.
So we're right here in this little.
Okay, now, but I have a question.
Yeah.
Where is the whole island? I want to see.
Okay, so North Kohala is up here.
Okay, there
we go.
Yeah. Thank you very much. As a local boy, it makes sense to me now. I see what you mean. Thank you very much.
It's kind of like, just to give it a little bit more of a contextual. North of there is going to be the Waikoloa, the big Hilton / huge out thing that's the Waikoloa Resort. And the first building, the first structure you're going to hit going south is probably another beach house.
Well, that's Keaweiki, yeah.
Keaweiki.
Mm-hmm, the Browns.
The Browns Estate, yes. Which is probably, should be on the historic.
That's always been our neighbor.
Yeah, okay. And that's, it's kind of like, I've personally never been there, but it's like a remote. Also remote.
It's very similar.
Very similar to this. Very remote.
Similar property. The right. House style is not similar to ours, but.
And there's a native. I'm not trying to tell you guys what you already know this, but in case anybody else is interested, there's actually a coastal trail. You can actually walk from Waikoloa.
I walked from Waikoloa.
That's how I got there. But I was with some of your relatives. But you can come along the coastline. From, and it's probably it's like a mile or two only, or it's not that long. I mean, it takes a long time because it's really rough. It's a really rough trail.
Yeah. It probably takes 35 minutes.
Well, it probably should be an hour. But and there's angling ponds along the way, too.
There are.
You can take a little hot, cold dip in those angling ponds.
Yeah, Kaimu, it's just to our north.
Yeah.
One cold country, you can't miss it.
Yes.
You walk up to the pond, it doesn't look like much, but it goes. Maokai goes back and opens up, it's really deep, and that's the clearest water.
Yeah.
Because there's no vegetation around it.
Mm-hmm. Super cold.
Or you can see like 130 feet underwater.
Yeah. So just for my contextual, it helps you guys to imagine it.
Another thing I'd like to point out is because of how the property sits. There's a point to our south and then a point to our north. You can't see Waikoloa. You can't see Keawe'iki. And you can see North Kohala and some of the, but.
I have another question.
Yeah.
When you see the whole island, I gather, I was just informed that you didn't have any roads to deliver a lot of your goods to your property. Now, that makes sense to me because the Kohala side is what I was thinking of. And when you indicate, I understand from the left side, if you look on the map, those places did not have access to the property. Correct. Therefore, a lot of it was done by the sea.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I asked the question about where your location is. And there are a lot of trails, as you indicated, on that side of the island. Thank you.
Wow. Okay. So, anybody else want to have questions or comments, either from the board or from the audience? Anybody?
One last question.
Yes.
In that part of the world, there's two famous historic lava flows. There's the 1801 and the 1859. Do you know if this is in either one of those?
We're on the 1859.
Okay.
And it's interesting. It's one of the most recent flows on that whole side of the island.
Yeah. I have another. So you reminded me of something too. And when I read the nomination, you talk about people with leprosy going there. Mm-hmm. Now you didn't mention in your presentation here, but how did you guys? Is that just oral history?
Oral history. I looked uh-huh. everywhere to try to find anything along the Kona coast, and could not. But there are. Up at the higher peaks, there are watchtowers that are built.
That's higher peaks, like way, way up the hill?
No, or? just like the, kind of the highest point of our property.
Of your property, mm-hmm. Okay.
There are little watchtowers, which would look
you think like,
that.
Stone?
Just like a circular rock wall, enough mm-hmm. for about two people to sit mm-hmm. inside.
And oh, that's what we've always been told, is oh. that was a hideout.
Okay.
But I couldn't find any proof of any... anywhere.
Just kind of oral history, kind of yeah. legend or
yeah, exactly.
passed down. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
I have a rather odd question, yeah. but I'm interested in the environment, the lua. Those are like lus, like
mm-hmm. outhouses.
Mm-hmm. Back when they were created, how did they deal with the waste? Was it just
And we still,
even now,
we still do it the same way as before. We've yeah. got a little galvanized bucket and a scooper with a hydrated lime, and that coats it, and it just
compost.
Slowly just, there's no smell, there's no flies, it just slowly just goes away.
So kind of like compost.
Self-compost. Good question.
Okay, interesting for sure.
What do you use the hale now for?
There's a shower to the side, that's the pond on the property that's most suited for swimming in. So we'll jump in and change clothes and hang up, you go on the
yes,
hallway.
If you're staying in the house, there's no interior walls, so if you want to change or...
Just for privacy?
Yes, exactly.
Be able to change, okay. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought, but...
Yeah.
The floor is of the smallest ili-ili, the mm-hmm. smallest black rocks that are not on the property, but there's plenty down at Keawe'iki, so they must have brought them over. Pour them out. It's really neat. Yeah. We used to have a hala mat in there, but it mm-hmm. yeah. disintegrated, so we just leave it.
Great. Well, I think we've get everybody's had a chance to ask questions and make comments, I believe. So I would like to entertain a motion from the board. No, we take a motion. Anybody want to make a motion?
The criteria
is to be
nominated. The criteria, B and C.
Actually, C.
Yeah. In both, originally, no, that's the wrong nomination. In both times, you did B and C,
yes.
So you did not change, yeah, B and C.
So I move that with the corrections we've suggested, mm-hmm. that we accept this nomination for placement under categories B and C on the State Register of Historic Places, and wish to send it on to the National Register.
I got a motion. Can I have
seconded.
A second? By Matt. Second by Matt. Okay. Any further discussion here? Board members? We discussed this internally. Anybody want to say something to another board member?
Hi.
I would just say, like, the rest of the board, you should go there.
Yeah.
The next time you're on the big side. Here we go. Give his family a call and see if we can get down there. That's all. I said that already. So,
seriously, though, you guys are welcome. We'd love to show it to you.
Okay. Any other, I think we can call for the question then, because I don't see anybody putting their hand up. Okay, so all in favor of the motion as Pat made it and seconded, please raise your hands. I think everybody's hands up. It looks like it's human.
No, what those pictures don't show. That, those are the most.
Thank you so much.
Those are the most enormous pune I've ever seen.
a lot of people getting in there.
By the way, Laura, are you guys leaving? Are you going to stick around for a while?
I'll stick around for next one.
Because I want to say, you can get the native how at Home Depot on Nimitz near Costco. The native one. I just bought 10 plants.
Can I put them in the overhead bin?
I don't know. But I just want to
tell you. Good to know. It's super hard to find.
And it's not the variegated. It's the native.
There's the purple one. There's the miniature ones. Yeah.
So anyway, I was there the other day because we bought 10 of them. So.
They're really nice.
They're like $8. They're like this tall.
Wow.
So. No. Okay. I don't know if they're out. They may not be going, taking them to the big island. I don't know, but.
Yeah.
Check it out. They have a whole native section in the Home Depot where they have the native plants.
You said the Home Depot on Nimitz.
Yeah, well, that's where I got it. I don't know about the other Home Depots.
Right.
But check it out.
I'll give them a jingle.
Yeah.
I just want to say this is a great record of your property, and if you find more information in the future that you think contributes to this, it's pretty easy to amend this to add.
Okay.
So I suggest you guys consider doing that.
Okay.
And you find more.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks so much. Okay. So now we move on to Wayson, which is a site that we visited this morning, except Katie.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
So, okay. Since Katie's here, we'll look through. See, they said, you just saw the house this morning. It's built in 1919, colonial revival style house. For Dr. White Wayson and his wife. The facade, right now, it has vinyl siding on, or metal siding, whatever it's called. But he intends to take that all off. And once he has money to paint the house, he'll take it all off, have that whole house painted. Underneath is the original shiplap, which appears to be in very good shape. The house is typical of colonial revival, symmetric facade. The multi-pane windows are typical. Also, more formal than many Hawaii houses. It has closed eaves underneath the roof line rather than open with the rafters. You have your door with a little flat entablature above it, four panel door here. All the original hardware is on the front door and also the doors inside the house. The portico shares on the side again, Doric columns. It's in bad shape. It used to have a balustrade up above, which will be replaced eventually. Have little fan light in the gable roof. The lateral running gable roof is also typical of colonial revival. The front door would be Hawaii, not colonial revival, where you have these pocket doors, in this case a 15 light pocket door, which is still intact and still working. The interior very much intact. You have your wainscot paneling underneath. Crown molding, the original stairway going up with a voluptuary little post, built-in cabinetry here, the original floors. There's the door again. And then here's the way up, and then this would have been the dining room. So again, very much a Hawaii colonial revival, the living room running across the entire front of the house, and living room, dining room flowing as one space. Here's the rear. The portico on the rear is still here, and he intends to restore the one in the front as well. The kitchen is, the flooring needs to be new. It's a laminate, so we found out today, or I found out at least. But the butler pantry is still here, and then the kitchen inside. Jalousie windows are here, but that's something that in the future he'll be working on to replace the double hungs. And then here's here is the kitchen still has all its original cabinetry as well. The little bell for the maid, and on the other side there's an old smoke detector. The knobs aren't new, but I think at some point you'll probably get to those. Inside the stairwell going up, the servant's stair, you still have a piece of original linoleum left. This is the stairwell going up to the disturbance there, again, all board and batten walls, and two or three panel door, I can't remember all the time. And then upstairs, again, very much intact, the original fir floors, the wainscots continued up there. You have all the original doors and knobs. And here's one of the bedrooms. This is the one that the person was in. They were just fixing it, and now it's done. And again, has pocket doors going out onto the porte cochere. There's one in both the two Mackay bedrooms. And this is a picture I found in the newspaper, so you can see the house very much is still there. This part has to be restored. And again, the front portico.
The front portico.
But he has all the, actually, this had collapsed. The sunroom had collapsed as well. He did salvage the columns, which are still there now. And he followed the footprints when he rebuilt over there. And so he has one of these, one of the columns is no good, so he can have to fabricate another column. And then there's one more. Okay. Here's the USGS map, the tax map, showing how large the parcel is. And simple floor plan, I was able to manage. Okay, that's it.
What about the second floor? Did you do a floor plan for the second floor?
I'm not that ambitious yet. Any questions that we have to answer? Again, very much it's a work in progress. The person definitely is not affluent and has been very much appreciative of getting a tax rebate so we can continue with the restoration of the house. He's already done plumbing, electrical, put a new roof on it, rebuilt the sunroof. And when he did do the sun porch, and really asked, I don't know what you heard, he did have the shiplap side milled so he could have the same tiling units on the whole rest of the house. And so it's coming along, and he still has some more things to do. But I think it's well enough along. We can see that it has sufficient integrity and meet the criteria. It's being listed under at the local level under criteria C. Also, just as a side note, it didn't put it under significance, but President Obama's mother did reside in this house in the 70s. She was a student, along with some other students.
I have a question.
Yes.
What's going to happen to all those avocados?
I can put in a request.
Because I don't come and say anything.
Thank you, Don. Thanks for your presentation.
So out there among the avocado trees, where there was a lot of foundation work for, it looked like a garage or something.
Yeah,
do you have any information about that? No, that photo you had showed
almost
like a carport, very minimalist superstructure.
Yes.
You think that's what was there originally?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It's quite a foundation, though.
I wouldn't want to touch this.
Yeah.
But he does eventually intend to want a garage on the property. That seems to like this spot.
All right. Well, why don't we open it up for questions from the board and or the audience? Anybody want to ask questions or have maybe a comment?
One thing that seemed absent to me was a fireplace. There's no fireplace. I just thought a house like that would have a fireplace. Was that
sometimes Colonial Revival do, sometimes they don't.
Okay.
I forgot to say, there's right now 9 Colonial Revival houses on the register. 6 of them are in Manoa, and 3 of them are in Nuuanu. One of the ones in Nuuanu has a fireplace. As a matter of fact, probably most of the support, the one on Terrace, that one had a fireplace.
passed into law. And then.
Cook residence has a fireplace in Manoa. It's not Colonial Revival, but they have a fireplace.
Yeah, and one of the ones on the one on Dowsett Avenue that we registered a while back, that one had a fireplace. Mm-hmm. But then there's one on the Poly that does not. Miss residence up on the Level Heights does not. It's
not formulaic. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's an extraordinary amount of historic material and character left of this property. I mean, it's a diamond in the rough, but it is certainly, in terms of like its state of maintenance and stuff, but boy, it's amazing. It's like a time capsule. That's my feeling.
I second that. Leave it to the fixtures, which usually go in the 50s or something, you know, bottom of it.
Yeah, the light fixtures are there, and even the small light fixtures, in them, especially the kitchen. Most of the houses we say have the new prestigious kitchen, and so even though we just kind of count that out, and this is so intact with the butler's pantry and everything's still there too.
To kind of counter that, I'd like to say that for me, three of the key elements of this building are missing. The porte-cochere on the left side, I believe that the entire thing is missing because it has a slope on it now, but it used to be flat because it used to be a deck that you could come out onto. So that entire roof is missing. The balustrade is missing. That we're missing the big covering over the what was the front door. We're also missing the entire lanai on the right side that probably had a balancing influence with what had been on the left side. So you have these three critical, in my opinion, critical elements of this project are completely gone for rot or whatever. And so I'm less inclined to say it's intact. I feel like it's lost some very significant pieces of information.
Nancy, it's a work in progress. And
but I mean, for me personally, they can come back.
The sooner he can have it replaced. It's going to take a long time.
I would rather see it replaced prior to putting it on the register.
Yes, but then it may take another 10 years or something rather than this way. If it's on the register, he can get the property tax savings. He can start investing more in that house. And without that, I think it's going to be a very long haul. Especially in Manoa, I don't know, but I think property taxes are no, especially on a property that size, it's probably getting close to 15,000,
20,000. At least, probably.
I'm not sure we're supposed to get into that
okay,
money
yeah,
value.
Just,
I think
I'm
it's a little bit outside the purview of our board to start talking about money and taxes and the reason we're supposed to do it for financial reasons for the customer, for the owner. I believe that's
I
probably a little bit out of our
reasons,
out of
I
our
think, I think it's
comments that we should consider.
Have it registered. Yeah. And I think there's enough of the house there. I looked at it right away. I knew it was a Colonial Revival house. And yes, I could see this element's missing. This element's not there, but it's something that will eventually be there.
Yeah, I guess I feel like the elements that are missing, there's either a photograph or other elements on the house that are exactly the same that could easily be duplicated. So to me, those things don't bother me that much.
Yeah. Anybody else want to make any comments about observations or opinions?
But putting it on the register now, at least you know the owner would have to follow certain guidelines on what was done to it in a way. So in a way, it would be beneficial for the ensuring the project moving forward would have.
So does we want to have a motion put on the table to this point? Unless somebody has anything else to say, I think we can entertain a motion.
I move we list the property on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under Criterion C Architecture.
Do I have a second for that?
Second.
Second from Paul Morgan. Okay. Anybody else want to say anything? No? Comments? Okay. Let's call for the question. All in favor of putting this on the in favor of the motion? Please raise your hands.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So that's 6-4 and opposed. We have 2 opposition. So we do have it on the register. It passed. So we have 6 people voting for it to put it on the register. Okay, so that brings us to the end of the projects of our nominations. And that brings us up to the next thing on the agenda is discussions of the minutes, which kind of is a high, I mean, there's a couple of things. Katie, I know, are we still good with you? You still have a half an hour, so you can stick around a little longer. Regarding the minutes, I think from our last OIP training, we had some insights into the requirement that we would have written minutes. In all cases, we need to have written minutes. I think that what I wanted to talk about was whether the board wishes to continue to have written minutes as we did previously, or whether we wanted to have minutes in this, where it was the briefer version and that the entire board meeting was posted online. Because I believe that's up to the board to do that, from what OIP was telling me, that would be a board decision, not a staff position. And I mean, you may have some opinions about that, Alan and Chandra, but no matter what, we need to have some minutes. I know that that's a black and white thing with OIP, that they have to have, there has to be a form of written minutes that states action, motions, who was attendance, who made the motion, who made this, you know, that there is a protocol for how to do those minutes. And I think the difference is, do we use the recorded as our main document, or do we continue to have the minutes be a little more in-depth as written minutes, and then that actually becomes the minutes without the secondary recording being available to the public?
The recording is always going to be available to the public. So, but, you know, under the law, we can't substitute written minutes for the recording. So, I mean, that's always going to be there.
That's not what OIP said.
I think you made, you know, it's been very clear, it's been made clear to us that if, you know, what the law requires, we don't provide minutes. The law, you know, what the legislature said is that we have, you know, posting the actual minutes, you know, online as a recording is the preferred alternative. And whether those are posted online or not, if somebody asks for them, we have to do it.
That's different. If somebody were to ask for them, then that's different from posting them.
I understand that doing written minutes is a much larger job for us. I mean, it's a significant increase in the amount of work that is involved in preparing, you know, summaries, and that requires.
But we are required to have them, to have written minutes of some
written
kind.
Written minutes only that reflect what's the motion and what was the vote.
And who's in attendance. And
but I mean, that's it. That's what's the written, that's the requirement for the written minutes. So if we want to go, I mean, if you're talking about saying, well, no, we want the staff to take the time to summarize the minutes, and then correct them after you have gone through that, you know, subsequently, that's a significant increase in the amount of work that is required of us to prepare those.
OIP told me that when we make amendments to the minutes, that they need to be going to be corrected on the website, and then the word draft removed, so that the revised minutes need to be posted on the internet, showing the corrections that we made. I do not believe that's been done the last few years, where the corrections have been reflected in the minutes. On, like, it's still drafts. For many years, for several years going back, it doesn't reflect the revision and the corrections that we made. And I don't know whatever happened to those corrections. I don't know what happened, you know, when we said I wasn't there, or, you know, I recuse myself or what have you. Know, all those corrections that we make when we have approval of the minutes, I don't know what happens to those corrections.
I have the correction. So I'm working on updating all that.
Going back, because I think it's like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, so I'm going back not only from when I started, but I'm trying to go back to where the previous person was doing it. So, but it will be updated and corrected. Cicely was before me. I'm working on it. So.
But that's like 4 years. Like we're talking about at least. But Cicely left about 4 years ago, I think.
It was like maybe like 2.
No, I think it was longer.
There was some that I had to finish yet. So.
Yeah, I think it was longer ago than that.
Yeah. No. But I'm working on it though. So.
Okay.
If I could make a comment,
yeah,
I would really prefer the bare bones. I remember in the days when staff tried to summarize, it was, even when we made corrections to the summaries, they weren't really quite comfortable. I wasn't always comfortable the way things got summarized in the end. So I think having the motions, the attendance, and all of that as a permanent written record, and having the tape recording as an available permanent record, whether it's posted, that I don't know, the regs, whether you want to post it or just hold it, but either way, I think if we just have the bare bones one and it's ready for the meeting, I think that would be really preferable.
Well, the only reason I brought this up is because we didn't even get the written ones two meetings ago. We didn't even get. You said that there was no requirement for any minutes, and that it was all just online. So that's what generated.
I didn't say that. The new requirements that they have is that we have it on an audio file, and then we also have an accompanying minute. But it's like you said, bare bones. So it does have who was there, the vote that was taken, and it also has a timestamp of each thing. So if you guys go and amend something or vote, I do put it on there. So the last meeting that we did have, the OIP lady that came here, she did take a look at it. And the format that it was in was fine. The only correction that she had for me to make was just to add who was absent.
Who was absent.
And just to put somewhere on there that this is to accompany an audio.
Yeah, there was the meeting before that we did not get any written. So that was the one before. That's generated the call to OIP.
No, there was, you guys have had minutes.
Well, it came that morning, I think, because I placed a phone call, but there was no minutes up until the morning of the meeting.
Okay.
Because I never got any
whenever
minutes.
I post the minutes, it always, when we post it onto the website, there's always a time date there. It says when the minutes are posted. So I know the last meeting we just had, you said that I didn't post the minutes. I gave it to you guys the night before, but I did post it ahead when it was went out, and the other board members also did get the minutes. So I don't know. So I was asking, I don't know which you're talking about, but
That was the first.
Well, the audio file, if that is the, if that's to be the official record, that does have the most on it. It's just as the record itself.
Right.
So we have it accompanying together now, if you look at our website, so that people can look at the file, and also the minutes is right there next to it.
Now it is, because
this is a new development. The first one that we did that was audio, I broke it into 5 sections. The meeting was 5 hours. And the audio program that we experimented that time, I could only make it for an hour. So I had to break the meeting apart. But now I've got another program where I can actually put the whole, the whole meeting in one file. And that way it's easier for the public to look at it and to look at the timestamps and so forth. Well, if you look at that, it's different now.
And what about the limited meetings?
The limited meeting is also on there. So for the limited meeting, I just have to post who was there on the minutes and who wasn't there.
What about the recording?
And then the recording is also on there. So if you look on our website, the limited meeting recording is there, and the minutes have a timestamp. Everything with OIP, the new law they have is I have to have a timestamp saying where, where did it start or so forth. So it's on there.
So I guess, this is just a point of discussion. There's no need for any motions or what have you. I mean, I think unless we want to have a motion, unless somebody on the board feels they want to make a motion.
I think it would be nice to have a printed copy of the previous board meeting. minutes on the, at the meeting for each member.
Well, I believe you're required to provide those, actually.
Well, I did give, the last meeting I gave you guys copies.
But I mean,
I sent copies to the, you know, three, and then when the meeting of that day, right. I also do put it with your folks' packets on the table.
The difficulty in this case, Bill, is that there was such a short time between the two meetings that I just couldn't get it done.
I'm within the
40 days, so. Right. I mean, the statute, statute requires it to be done within 40 days, and there was only 30 days before.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's true, that there's up to 40 days, too. So obviously, we'll have to consider that. And that, I think we discussed this at the beginning of the meeting, that those are going to come to the board in our November meeting, because it's, we don't have them today.
Yes.
And this meeting may or may not make it to the November. Well, it will have to, because I believe our next meeting is more than 40 days.
Yeah,
so we'll be considering two sets of minutes. But you do provide those, I know, to me. You mail them to me.
Yes.
I think Pat gets them.
Yes.
And so we are given some advance opportunity to review them.
Yes.
So,
so in that case, so like have like the meetings further apart for our next one, then yes, it's going to be in your, it should be in your packet. It'll be in there, because it's not like...
Well, the only reason these are so close is because last year we had such an overwhelming, like 30 nominations that came in like in a 2-month period. So we were trying to spread that out so that it wouldn't hit us in one meeting. So, and it turns out that's not what happened. We didn't get this huge windfall of nominations this year. Could get it next year, who knows? But, you know, that's why we're going to discuss meeting dates, I think, coming up on the agenda, like next. So unless anybody wants to make a motion, it sounds like we're going to get the abbreviated minutes, but you now know, we all know OIP's requirements for the, what those are will now be reflected in those minutes. And this, it's abbreviated, but it's still fairly,
it still
reflects what happened and the motions and all that will now be showing up in the minutes. So I'm happy with that. I think what's tricky is like if we have, where I see it a little bit of a gray area, say, Alan, say you give a, Dr. Downey, you give a report. Does that show up in the abbreviated minutes? Or is it only motions?
It's only motions. It's only,
so any, anything else that's discussed or any other items is not going to show up?
It's just on the audio file.
Yeah. So, so I do put a timestamp saying, okay, shift the report was at 10, I don't know, an hour or something, and I do have it on there, like I said. And then if one of the ones from the last meeting, you guys did a motion and you guys amended it and changed it. So every little thing that was changed, I had a timestamp saying, okay, at this point, this is where this happened, you know.
But it's only motions that you're going to record. You're not going to record any other highlights of any other reports. Or
I have to put the, according to OIP, I have to put the timestamp of when that took place so that the, whoever wants to review it can go and listen to that section or, you know, that. Even the nomination. So I'll put the nomination will start at this time, the vote was taken at this time, or, you know, so that's...
Right. Great, thank you. Okay. So, all right. Anybody else want to say anything about this tedious issue of minutes? Somewhat tedious? Okay. So then the next thing, I think, Katie, you want that on the nomination. Moving on to agenda item number E is a testimony time limit discussion. So I think we decided last time that we should have a discussion about that. I think currently it says 5 minutes, I think, in our
discussion. Yes, so it says 5 minutes right now, and you guys are going to discuss if you wanted to do 3 minutes, 2 minutes. OIP said it was... What you guys would decide.
Right. Yeah, I think it's up to the board to, you know, like today, for example, Valley definitely was more than 5 minutes, but we didn't, I mean, I didn't feel like we needed to cut
This
you
is
off,
for the testimony, though. This is for the audience.
Oh, testimony, okay, as opposed to present. So no we're not talking about the time to make the presentation.
No.
That's not considered testimony.
We're talking about the comments from the public. Yeah.
Like
so pollinators, for example,
right?
We limited to, I think it was 3 minutes or 5 minutes. We try to give everybody a... So here, at the ending here, it says that oral testimony will be limited to 5 minutes per agenda item.
That's how it is now.
That's how it is right now. But I can change it if you guys want.
And this is, I mean, this is intended to for a situation which obviously doesn't have to go out in one of the public lanes, where we had a huge number of people who wanted to present testimony, and we wanted to try to make it a manageable, you know, a manageable meeting.
Yeah.
There's no, I mean, so it says 5 minutes, it doesn't mean you have to limit them to 5 minutes. But it is fair warning that if they're busy or they've gone completely off track, the chair can say, you know, you've got 5 minutes, you need to wrap up.
Well, and in fact, the Poly Lanes, there was two meetings that I've had that I've chaired. One was that, and the other one was the Eva Plain hearing where we had like 50 people. 50 World War II vets that came out on that, and that was almost as many people as Poly Lanes. But in that, in both, particularly for Poly Lanes, I asked them to do it in 3 minutes. And they did. I mean, pretty much, there was one or two exceptions, but most people are very aware of the 3 minutes, and I think weren't we holding up cards or something and saying, finished?
Yeah.
I mean, we're actually giving them clues, and I think that the public was really responsive to that, and we got through it, and it was a pretty long meeting. That was one of those five-hour meetings.
I have a question. In regard to the testimony, why don't we just leave it at 5 minutes, and you or whomever is the chair can extend that or not extend it? The idea is that the public who testify need to have some point of indication, so they don't have to stay and ramble forever. So I think 5 minutes is sufficient.
Okay, well, if that's the case, we may not even have to make a motion. Because I believe it's a standing.
They do this for legislation.
It's a policy already, so if anybody has...
5 minutes is a long time.
Yeah.
Is there a limit on legislative testimony? Do they have 5 minutes?
Yeah,
I think that.
They do.
I've done that many times. Yeah. And if you have more to say, submit a written statement, and that's fine.
Is everybody happy to leave it at 5? Do I hear any dissent from the board or alternate opinions? So I guess we'll just leave it at 5, and we had a nice discussion about it. So moving on to the staff report.
Well, I only have two things to talk about. One is, the governor has appointed Dr. Trish Watson to the board. We heard about this kind of indirectly initially, so we had to follow up with the governor's office to confirm it, and only got her oath of office was only provided to us on Wednesday, so we anticipate that we will have a 10th member by next week.
All right.
One other question from Pat this morning about our staff vacancies, and just very quickly, so we have a total of 40 positions now. When I started, we had 27.
No, I mean 40 positions?
40 positions within the division.
Oh, total.
And of those, when I started here, we had 27 positions, we had 14 filled. So we now have 27 filled positions. So we have 11 vacancies. We have had one position where he made a selection, and it has been, the offer has been made. It's accepted for our archivist. We have made an offer for architectural historian, and it was declined simply because we don't pay enough. We had another one of our archaeologist positions on Maui had the same situation. We made an offer, it was declined for financial reasons. We are interviewing candidates for one of our archaeology positions on the Big Island. We are scheduling interviews for our GIS technician position. We are interviewing for the architectural branch chief and for both of our vacant office assistant jobs. All the rest of our positions are being advertised. We're waiting for qualified applicants to come in. With two exceptions, we had an archaeologist position on a lot that was just went vacant that has not yet been advertised. And then we have another position that is still in administrative limbo within the department before we can get it posted. And the reality is, I've talked to other SHPOs, and they tell me they're having just as much trouble recruiting on the mainland as they are here. And the nationwide unemployment rate is so low that it's hard to get people to come up for a job.
So there's a recession.
And we may get that whether we want one or not. That's the reality. And we pay significantly more than most SHPMs. And, the people who declined the offers had enough sense to look hard at what it really costs to live here and why. And we all know it's much more expensive here. And if you're coming from mainland, I know I went through this myself. I know it's going to be more expensive. It's not until you actually start writing the checks that you realize just exactly how expensive it is. So, that's the reality.
I have a question. In regards to your staff personnel, is the governor, or no, he only has one, I think he has only a couple of, 1 or 2 years left, I don't know. But is he planning on fulfilling any of these? You told us about the filling and what you're doing right now, but my point is, if you can't get the people, is he thinking about raising the rate? How the heck are we going to get people if we can't have the quality for their raise or whatever to get them here? I mean, is the administration aware of that, or the legislature? My point is, I don't want to waste my time coming here listening to the same old garbage. That's the reason I asked the question.
Well, I think the answer is that everybody's aware of it. There was some actual discussion in the legislature last year in the Ways and Means Committee about raising salaries. Senator Del Cruz, who chairs Ways and Means, at one point, in one of our hearings, or the DNR hearings on the budget, they made a point of saying, we're not interested in adding positions, we want to raise salaries. And at the end of the day, certainly I'm a state employer, I'd like to see salaries raised. I'd also like to fill all these vacancies. But, to be honest, to be competitive, I think, particularly saying if we were to target, for example, I want to be able to recruit back. He's not interested, but if I want to recruit an archaeologist who works in the private sector in Hawaii, I'm going to have to pay at least 50% more than I do.
I have to stop you right there. What drives me insane is we have a salary commission that keeps giving a raise to the legislature and the city council. And this is the reason I ask the same question. Why is there no kind of salary commission for your area? This is the question. But, don't answer it because we can't give an answer. Thank you very much.
Alan, would you mind telling me, what is the range for the architectural historian now?
That's very sweet of you to share that information with
good
us,
Lord,
Julie.
You should be paid more.
Well, I think the one that turned it down must have been one I recommended, right? So, I provided a reference for her.
Honestly, I almost put as much on my credit card as I
did.
Oh. So, I really did.
Hugs.
I didn't realize how much it was going to cost to move here.
Worth it.
I brought nothing with me, but still the moving expense is a big part of that. So that's the reason why the person on Maui couldn't make it here. It's coming straight from grad school. You just kind of need a little bit of cushion to get here. So, and I know other people I talked to, is just if they had a little bit of help, between A and B getting here, they definitely would consider the
That is departmental policy. Absolutely will not pay travel.
Sorry. Well, just to give you perspective, our assistant professor is now started 80. And we do pay $5,000 moving. And they're working 9 months. So that just gives you an idea of salaries go.
I looked through, and this was sort of before I had started having people turn it down. I looked at what I thought salaries ought to be, and I actually ran a budget, and it ran us almost $750,000
What was the $750,000? I'm sorry.
That's how much it would have increased our budget.
Oh, your budget.
Yeah. Since right now, I mean, in the 5 years I've been here, and in the memory of anybody who works for SHPD, the legislature has not given us one penny more for operating expenses. So when we offer when we give somebody a raise or offer above sort of the budgeted salary, that comes out of our operating expenses. And so, you know, I'm looking to give raises. If I'm looking to offer more, that comes out of you know, paying for the phones, paying for travel, paying for paying for office furniture.
I have a question. What do you do, like, if you have 27 positions filled out of 40, what do you do with the money that, where you don't have the salaries of those 13 people?
The other 11 people.
13 people. What do you do with that money?
We reprogram it. So we do have the option, you know, we go back to the governor's office at the end of each quarter and say we've got this much in savings on the vacancies. And we want to reprogram it for this purpose within the division. And, you know, and right now that pays for the people who are getting salaries above the budget rate.
Who has the jurisdiction to give raises? Is that you or?
Well, for the positions which are exempt, most of our positions are exempt from civil service.
It means you get paid more.
We can negotiate salaries. Once that initial salary is approved and accepted, then if I want to give somebody a raise, I have to go back to the HR with a recommendation. And if they say, well, yes, we think their duties justify the higher salary, then I have to go get the fiscal officer to sign off on it, and then the chair has to sign off on it. I wish I could wave my wand and give people raises. With the civil service employees, that's set
their law.
And that's, we have no flexibility here.
All right, so you had one thing. Did you have a second thing on here? You said you had two things.
No,
Trish Watson.
Oh, okay. Sorry, lost track. Do you have anything else? Maybe we'd like to ask some questions. I don't know. Is that okay? Huh? Okay, you want to ask Dr. Downer any questions?
Yeah, we were Googling Dr. Trish Watson to find out who she was. Is she going to be, is her expertise in sociology, or do you know?
I'm not sure what position she was appointed to. So bear in mind that the law requires that the board have one member in each of the five specialties, and the other, you know, the governor could pick any five people for the other positions. Her training, she's a lawyer, she's mm-hmm. got a doctorate in anthropology. Mm-hmm.
American Studies.
Yes, American Studies.
I was on the committee.
Yes, my apologies. She sounds so much more like an anthropologist. So I don't know whether the governor specified. As I say, we heard about this in a roundabout way. Trish emailed me and said, "When's the next meeting?" And we go, "Huh?" Yeah. She said, "Well, I got a list letter from the governor." Well, first we heard.
Okay. Well, it's not really important. I just thought you might know.
I sort of assume, she runs a consulting firm that does both anthropology and archaeology.
And she's been doing something with the rail, of
she's
course.
But I don't know exactly. And there's, all of the five required specialties mm-hmm. are represented, mm-hmm. so she could be effectively at large. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else anybody wants to have any more staff?
She's brought up in Hawaii, just to throw that out.
Born and raised,
Punahou graduate.
What
cup?
Okay, never mind. Just joking. So anything else? Anybody? Questions here? Staff? Other staff? All right. So let's talk about the meeting dates for we also, obviously, we have Friday, November 22nd, is our next board meeting, and I was hoping we could do it in one day the way we did today, but now that I see that we have five nominations being considered instead of just the two, it might be possible we could do it in one day. It's two in Manoa and one in Chinatown. But if we were to change the limited meeting to Friday morning, I think we would have to have a motion and a second and, you know, vote on it.
So. Yeah, because there's six, actually.
Pardon?
Six properties that are nominated.
Six. I'm sorry. I've been corrected. It was six. Yeah, six properties. But I think of the six... For the site visits, only three would be potential site visits because we've either been to the sites already, and there was in the Hongwanji, one's on the Big Island, or one's in Haleiwa, which we saw last month.
Yeah, so we have three site visits.
And the third one's on Maui.
And then that we have to go to three, and then
right.
The nominations total is six.
And for me personally, it doesn't matter. It's the neighbor island people. You guys, if you want to weigh in on this, Pat, or maybe Alton, if you guys want to weigh in on the one day versus the 2 day, I'd love to hear from you. I think we'd all like to hear from you about whether we want to try to do it all on a Friday, which would probably bump the meeting into the afternoon.
And we only can be in here till 4.
Yeah, but I think we can do that. I mean, I think it's, I mean, that's another point.
As long as we don't have other business, I guess.
I mean,
discussion business
six nominations, you know, probably noon to 4. We'd probably have to have that meeting from noon to 4, probably.
No, if you feel like it's impossible to do it in noon to 4, we can look for a different facility where we can start.
Yeah, because from what I understand, Don, the two Manoa ones are real close together, and you said they're really small and simple buildings. It's not like we're going to be on a campus or something.
True.
So those two could probably then be done pretty quickly. I would imagine we could maybe start in Manoa, then go to the Fort Street. I don't know who did that nomination for Fort Street. Is it Mason Architects or do you remember?
Sure. No, I don't know.
Just, and then we could probably convene here, you know, without a big break like we had today, where we just come straight here.
And I think the Honoka'a Honoji, most of the board saw when you visited Honoka'a.
Correct. So we're clearly not going to that site visit on Thursday or Friday because it's on the Big Island. One's on the Big Island, one's on Maui, and the one we've already seen in Haleiwa. So there's only the three that we would have to do on Friday morning. I'm happy to do it either way. It's a little less stressful not to do it all in one day in a way. It kind of softens the schedule a little bit. But again, it's not my call either way. Pat? What do you think, Pat?
Not having seen most of these nominations, there isn't a great way to tell how long each of the discussions will be. It certainly right. would be easy to, since Manoa and downtown are, you know, not far apart, that part would be easy to do in the morning. Mm-hmm. I just can't tell about the rest. If we could do it essentially in 3 hours from 1 to 4. That's going through a nomination in half an hour.
What about
each one.
What about if they say noon to 4?
Then it's 4 hours and 20 minutes for each one. It's not as comfortable for me if the meetings begin before 9.
Because you're catching a flight.
Yeah, and then getting to the location of the meeting. But it's, you know, you all who take the minutes and have to timestamp it might have a better sense of approximately how long each of our discussions take.
Sometimes you folks, your discussions are long, sometimes it's short. I mean, it all depends on how many questions you guys have.
So you saying we're not consistent?
If we stick to the site visit times, like saying, okay, we're only going to do 15 minutes at this one and 15 at that one, I mean, maybe we could get back here by 11 and start at 11. I don't know, but that's totally mm-hmm. if everybody's on the same page, and we have to really stick to
Alton's time limits. Alton doesn't matter to Alton.
It's easier for me to do it in one day, I will tell you.
Easier for me to do. I mean, it's 2 days out of my life. I love the one day thing because my one day is, you know, normally we start a board meeting at 9:30 on Friday, so you know, we'd be starting a little bit later. But anybody else have an opinion who actually lives on Oahu? Okay, Paul likes 2 days. Okay.
2 days works for me sometimes too, because you have to just set aside a morning and another morning.
Yeah,
so
you can work on both days.
Yeah. I'm fine either way.
I'm either way.
Sounds like consensus. I think we're going to do it on 2 days. But do you want to take a vote? Anyone wants to make a motion?
Sure.
Make a motion.
Go ahead, Paul.
I'll for 1 day, vote for 2 days.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, we already know that we have to have the main meet, the regular board meeting has to be on Friday. It just is, we don't know the time. So.
I propose we have it on 2 days.
I have a
proposal. I second the motion.
Okay, we got a second on that to have it on 2 days. Any more discussion? All in favor of 2 days? Raise your hand. Okay. Well, at least we talked about it. Okay.
It's the end of the year anyway, so.
Yeah, and I thought we only had two nominations until today when I found out we had six. So
one quick comment, if I might, Nancy, is
yeah.
Judd Building, I don't know if anybody, is it listed on the National Register already?
I thought it was part of Merchant Street.
Yeah, it's part of the Merchant Street Historic District, and I think it's called out. In the old days, they used to have pivotal buildings or key buildings, and I do believe Judd Street was one of the pivotal key buildings. So under the tax and credit program, it's already eligible for investment tax credit. So.
Well, we have more to find out about that. So, okay, so regarding the 2020 meetings. Katie, before you leave, do you care anything about the 2020 board meetings? Do you want to weigh in before you leave?
That's right. Just let me know.
Whatever we agree is fine with you. Okay. Thank you, Katie. Bye.
We'll find a special assignment for you in your absence.
So this year we did 5 meetings. It was really backloaded to the back side of the year. To the last 3 meetings are pretty close together. Historically, we got a lot of nominations coming in June, July, August, bumping into September, October, November. That wasn't the case this year. We ended up with a light load. So is it okay if we go back to 4 a year? Anybody?
I think that's fine.
Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. Try that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we won't regret that. But, so if we go back to 4 a year, I think what's really important, we got caught up in this, and Don Hibbert, you can weigh in on this. We got to have it voted on so that you can, if you're trying to get that tax credit, you know, there's a deadline, which I believe is the end of August.
Yes.
Like we would have to.
Because of Labor Day, is this coming Tuesday. So, yeah.
So we want to front load.
If you can have it earlier rather than later in August, it makes.
Have it earlier in August. And then maybe just have just one more, maybe, you know, in November or something, right? So those two meetings might be, you know, maybe one, maybe early August or mid August at the latest.
Early is better, probably.
Early is.
Because mid August, you're already going to hit admissions day.
Okay, so good point. So we try to maybe schedule one in early August. Maybe one in November, so it doesn't bump until like Christmas and New Year's and all that stuff. And so that then just leaves two more. Usually we do one in May. We usually do one in March.
May,
I think March and
March.
May.
So this year we had it in March, May, July, August, November.
That's it.
So if you guys want to, I don't know, do like February next year, May, August, and November.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Sure.
Those months.
Okay. Yeah. And then we'll just look at avoiding those state holidays or.
Yeah, and then those Friday. The deadlines for the. Yeah.
So we'll have something. Chandra, you and I will work out something for the next board meeting to present.
Yes.
To be motioned and seconded and agreed on. So then you can then post that.
I'm just curious.
The 2020 meetings you can post.
If maybe the May should be June, I don't know. I know it gets into summer when people travel.
One of the problems with June is you get into all these graduations, and there's like
true.
All of these crazy.
I'm just thinking, people when they come to me, I want a nomination. If I can
that, like, for the May meeting, that means January. So for the rest of the year, anybody that comes to me, it's the August meeting.
So, right. June.
They want it. They got to get it done.
Well, how about late May, which is actually when we do it.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think right around the end of May, there's all these graduations, like high schools and then new age, and then and it's like it runs for like the whole first 2 weeks of June.
No, I'm not thinking about that so much as to when people call up. Oh, it's the new year. I should get my property registered. Yeah, but then they don't do it till February. But if it's February, they already missed the May meeting, so they're on the August agenda by on default.
Well, you know, early the work. Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to say, too, that there's a huge lag time between when the nominations have to be in and when the meetings are. That's not the meeting time that's crucial. It's that huge amount of time. That's a big distance between when we have to submit, and then it sort of sits in a quiet place somewhere in Chifty and before it gets to the actual meeting.
That's probably something outside the jurisdiction of the board at this time.
We could close up the meeting. Those...
Yeah.
The only way to shorten those times is for staff not to review the nominations at all.
We definitely need the staff to review the nominations.
Because
we need that.
Yeah.
And we need complete nominations.
That time is set. We have a hard deadline 60 days before the meeting. We have to have all of the nominations so we can do the required notices. And so, you know, the reason we need that other 60 days is to give the staff time to review them and, if necessary, return them with comments to the nominator in time for them to have at least 30 days to make amendments if they choose to.
Well, I know our board has many times has requested that all of the nominations would be complete.
Difficulty then, too, you know, by the same token, you know, with that 60-day hard deadline, if we get a revised nomination in 61 days, we don't have time to review it again before we have to start the process. So, you know, we don't even have time to look at it and say, well, we recommended a change here. Did they do it?
We still need complete nomination.
The only way we can allow for a second review is to actually push the nominate the initial deadline back even further. And I'm not thrilled with 120 days, but there's no way to do it in less than that. And you know, anything more than that, you know, you've heard Laura's complaint, and I have complete sympathy for a long time in advance.
And you also don't have the staff to review it now. Just went through that part.
Now, whenever staff vacancies is a problem. No question about it. It affects our capacity to do work in a timely fashion.
Well, my wish is to get complete nominations, because the less. The meeting before, we had half the nomination was missing. We got it. We never did get the other half. And then this one, a third of the nomination was missing. Of yours, Donnie, it was a big chunk. It wasn't like five terms, or please correct the terminology or the spelling. I mean, it was a huge chunk of the documents were missing the last two board meetings. One was Hong Wanji, and the other one was Lisa. It was just missing when we got the documents when it was posted.
Three pages.
Five pages.
It was the 3 pages of the map.
Yeah, I think it was 5 pages, but whatever it was these 5 pages. I think it's 5 pages. 4 pages. But you know that we would be just making sure we're getting the prime document is intact when we get it. That would be nice if that could happen, because sometimes we don't realize that we're missing it until we go and review it maybe a day or two before the. If you know, we don't get it necessarily read the second we get it, because we might have a life, you know, whatever, doing other things. But you know, to find out that a chunk of that is missing, but it exists somewhere. It's sitting in some in basket or in some CD or DVD somewhere or whatever. That didn't get into our documents has been happening with fair frequency recently, or over the last couple of years anyway. So I'd like to just see that we can minimize that happening, if possible. It's a little heartache.
We're working on it.
Okay, that'll be good. Thanks. So, anything else on the meeting dates? I think we did that. And I'm going to also need one thing.
The motion on the limited meeting,
which I forgot to put on the agenda, or we forgot to put on the agenda. We should always have it on the agenda. I would like to say that we need a motion from someone on the board to. You have to make them.
I move that we have a limited meeting prior to the next regular board meeting.
Because
we need an opportunity to visit the sites.
And for
safety and privacy.
And safety and privacy.
Liability.
And liability.
I need all this written out.
So we have a motion here from.
I second.
Second from the two bills, Bill Chapman and Bill Sousa. And all in favor, raise your hands, okay? Anybody object?
No.
Objecting?
You totally had my. No, I had enough for the first vote still.
Okay. All right, all in favor of the motion.
It was still up there for the first vote.
I think it was unanimous, but let's just check on that. Okay, all right, everybody.
This is way up.
The meeting is adjourned at 1:15.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.